I think a motto that I came up with is I could be broke anywhere. You know, like you could be broke in your hometown. You can move to a dream destination and be broke there, you know, but if you have a vision for, you know, or a direction that you're chasing, I think a lot of times people look at it financially first and say this is impossible. And it may be at first like to thrive, but I think sometimes surviving is thriving, I guess, depending on what your perception is. Like if I'm getting by and my kids are fed and my wife's happy, and I'm doing what I love and I'm creating something cool and something that blesses other people and myself, I think that's thriving in my mind.
Hey guys, this is Hunter Levine, and thank you for listening to the Captain's Collective podcast, brought to you by Skinny Water Culture, Turtle Box Audio, Florida Fishing Products, Costa Sunglasses, and Orvis Fly Fishing. Over the past several years, I've interviewed nearly 100 various fishing captains and industry leaders, and today's guest is definitely one of my favorites that I've came across so far. Jesse Mails is a content creator, fly tire, and operator of an amazing fishing operation in Costa Rica, where he focuses primarily on tarpon in the deep dark waters, but also plays with various jungle fish and other offshore species. In this podcast, Jesse dives into not only some helpful tactics on fishing, but his overall outlook on life and how he went from being a Domino's pizza guy to a well-traveled and versed angler. Jesse shares about our need to be able to slow down in life, the choice of contentment, and the importance of mental toughness, as well as some helpful insight on targeting fish and growing in your craft. We hope that you enjoy our time together. Thank you for listening. This is the Captain's Collective.
I'll say it's anything you choose, I think it picks you. You know, it's genetic.
Let everything else stop in the world and just be quiet. And it's amazing where your mind goes at that point, and where it doesn't go. And sometimes just that quiet space is what we need, and especially in this day and age.
If you have a fly rod in your hand, it's this tool that takes you to beautiful places. You meet hopefully wonderful people, and it's just this cherry on top of this outdoor adventure.
When the fish is coming, that shot within a shot, that timer starts. Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep, beep. No one else knew anything anyway, and you just definitely making it up as you're going along. But
so what Grandpa and Dad would tell me is like, all right, where's the old big trout laying out there? Where's his shaving cream on the water? Where's he been shaving this morning? So look for his shaving cream on the water, and that's where he's going to be.
All right. Hey, Jesse, thanks so much for hanging out today. Had a great day on the water with you. Now we're sitting down by the water here, enjoying some drinks and getting ready to grill some hamburgers and put a nice end on a great day. But I'm excited just to sit down and have you on the podcast.
Yeah, totally, man. I really appreciate you having me over here and showing me around this area. I've never been up here before, so I'm stoked.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that I think is really, really cool about you is kind of just how you got into this industry and how you got into fishing. Will you just give us that background and that bio of really where all this began for you?
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, my dad taught me how to fish when I was really young, and my grandfather was a fisherman from Cuba, fished all over the place with him, and he kind of settled in Florida, which is where pretty much both my families are kind of from, my immediate families. So I grew up fishing Florida, man, bass, inshore saltwater. And then it really wasn't until post-college, really, right around the time I got married, actually, that I started fly fishing heavy and kind of, like, set the spinning rods down, you know, because, like, you go out on the boat with the fly rod and a spinning rod, it's hard not to pick up the spinning rod sometimes.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, I remember doing a canoe trip with my cousin, and he broke my last spinning rod, and I was like, that is it. I am not buying another one. And I didn't. And I just, even to this day, like, we have some for the guiding business and things in Costa Rica, which we'll get to, but, you know, I just went straight fly fishing probably 10 years ago now, 11 years ago now, and it was probably the best thing I ever did, really, because it kind of forced me to learn how to cast in the wind like we were doing today and really be able to put it on the button.
So you got into fly fishing, just kind of stumbled in it on your own and was doing mostly canoe stuff?
Yeah, yeah, so I've always fished off paddle crafts pretty much my whole life. A lot of river stuff, lake stuff, with my dad growing up for bass. And then I remember my dad had a fly rod when I was young. I think like 8 or 9, maybe. He taught me how to fly cast, mm-hmm. kind of in the backyard for a second. And then I think I caught a few bass and bluegill on it, and then was just like, that's it. There's nothing more to do with this thing except trout. And I think he did have like a VHS tape of people catching like salmon or something that I would watch like religiously as a kid, you know? And that was it really until I started seeing people catching redfish and catching saltwater stuff. And that really got me interested in what could you do with these things. Mm-hmm. And I bought a 5-weight, I think, from Bass Pro, and then paddled my kayak around Indian River Lagoon system, catching everything I could on my 5-weight. For years, yeah.
Was there like a moment for you where it went from just being something that you loved as a kid to something that you felt like, wow, I want to orient my life around this? What did that look like?
Man, definitely. It definitely did early on, too. And I didn't know anyone that fly fished when I started fly fishing, but I knew it was something that started taking a lot of my creative kind of flow. Like, I always was a creative person. Drawing, painting, that type of thing, and just overall thought process have always been orientated in a creative way. And when I started fly fishing, I assumed that people tied their own flies. I didn't know people bought flies. Like, I really just started fly tying right away, and so that kind of took all my creative thought. And then I was already addicted to fishing because I grew up doing it, and the fact that I could kind of make my own lure essentially, or fly, and go out and feed it to a fish, just changed everything for me. And I knew, I was like, something's gonna happen with this. And at the time, I was managing pizza restaurants, Domino's pizza restaurants in Orlando, one of the, actually the second busiest store in the Southeast.
Shouts out.
Yeah. And I quit that like almost immediately, and started working at an outdoor store in Altamont Springs, and just didn't look back. I was like, I'm gonna make it in outdoor industry one way or another.
So tell me about, from quitting Domino's and losing your employee discount code and all that.
Yeah, it sucked. A lot of pizza consumption, for sure.
And to getting to where you're running an operation out of Costa Rica and you're doing your own professional fly tying. Walk me through kind of your progression as a professional in the industry.
It all kicked off while I was in Costa Rica. So, like, the move to Costa Rica, you know, we talked, like, most of my decisions are faith-based. You know, I felt like that's what God had for me, and I went down there and not having a good plan, and I was tying flies because me and my buddy we were like, if we're gonna be down here, we're gonna fish. And there was a lot of, we were just looking at Google Earth and driving the truck places and trying to see what was going on, and all we had was like this beat up kayak we'd launch it in these crocodile infested rivers and all this some that we found out we should never go back to because there's so many crocs in.
It's like a little, but, top water for
dude, it was like top water. Yeah, it was like a spook. And I was tying flies one day at the house, and my friend was like, hey, man, you should sell this fly. Like, this is a sick fly. And I was thinking, you know, no one wants to buy these flies, dude. Like, no, I'm down here in Costa Rica. We're trying to figure other stuff out. Mm-hmm. Selling flies isn't my bag of tricks right now. But I was wrong about that for sure, because I was like, you know, just to humor you, like, I'll tie up some. And I think that's when I really started the Instagram and the Facebook backwater fly fishing thing. And I posted a few fly photos on there, and people went nuts over them. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wow, maybe I can sell these. And I started selling flies, a lot of flies. I pretty much supported my family for 2 full years just selling flies, like, wow, thousands of them. And it was like, wow, people buy these things, you know? And that's really the entry was fly tying. And as a huge passion, and still a huge thing that my business runs on, I still do custom. I have custom fly orders I got to tie when I get home, you know? It's it'll always be a part of it. And then fly instruction. Like, I started doing a lot of YouTube tutorials and, you know, that type of thing. And it's still, fly photography is something I still, you know, I'm super interested in. So
yeah, and I got a lot of questions kind of around the media side, but with the Costa Rica thing, so you go from, okay, you're working at Domino's, you start tying flies.
Yeah.
You're, I mean, Central America. You're married somewhere in there.
Yeah, I get married.
Somewhere in there.
Right.
And talk to me about kind of the move down to Costa Rica and what that looked like, and kind of what the operation looks like whenever you guys kind of really got it off the ground.
Yeah, so what ended up happening was I started the Instagram, Facebook, YouTube stuff, and I'm trying to figure out media and stuff because I never knew anyone that took photos or did video, so I'm trying to figure this stuff out. And it sort of got to where, after a few years, we had so many people just seeing the videos and asking us, "Hey, man, are you guiding? Like, how are you doing this stuff?" And it was never intentional to start a guiding company, mm-hmm. but it just became the natural next step because we had so many people asking us that it just made sense to be like, you know, we found a lot of cool places that before other people weren't going. Like, there's still places we guide and go that other people don't, you know, and that's really cool. Like, when I think about it, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't pioneer anything per se, but we've opened up areas that previously weren't guided, and which is really, really neat. Whereas, you know, Florida is like the oversaturated fishing capital of the world. So that was a good feeling. And so we started the guiding company and sort of simultaneously started doing freelance media for people because it was, you know, people started asking like, "Hey, who's taking all these photos? Who's shooting this video?" And that opened up doors to start freelancing more. And yeah, it's a big part of what I do now. Definitely. It's a big part of my income is freelance media work.
Yeah, and the way that I heard about you and found out about you was through Vince and through Court. And so Vince Stagura from Skinny Water Culture, he's always giving me, like, good recs.
Yeah, know, he just, good buddy,
he's,
for sure.
He's, like, the most gifted guy.
Now, oh, I know. And everyone likes Vince.
Yeah, and, like, finding good people. Yeah. And so Vince had kind of put you on my radar, and then I was talking with Court, and Court was, like, telling me about how he was going to go down to Costa Rica, and he was doing this trip with you guys. Mm-hmm. And I was really intrigued by the whole scenario of chasing tarpon in this darker water. Can you just give us an overview of, like, kind of what's your go-to fishing in Costa Rica and what people can expect?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the guiding company we run, we do coast to coast. You know, we have the Caribbean side and we have the Pacific side, and that opens up a lot of opportunities for different saltwater species and then everything in between, like a bunch of jungle rivers and things that we could fish. But the big thing right now is definitely going to be our tarpon fishery that we're really pumped to open up on the Caribbean side. And it's really northern Caribbean towards the border of Nicaragua, and it's a big river mouth that dumps out there. And we pretty much target them outside the mouth and behind the breakers. So those fish are coming up in the river mouth really just to feed. You know, they're there year-round. It's not a migratory scenario. So we base our seasons just around the weather, the months that are going to give us the best weather. Because if you got big seas getting out of that river mouth in the center console is a nightmare. It's been silted in a lot from sediment, so it's a shallow, shallow river mouth. And you could easily get a boat stuck in there if it's not the right condition. So going when it's right is good. And then the tarpon fishing is dark water, but that dark, muddy water sort of sits up top, and then you have this gin-clear Caribbean water below it. And sometimes we'll be catching fish in 80 feet of water, you know. And fighting a tarpon in 80 feet of water is a nightmare, just so you know. fighting a tarpon...
Yeah, go straight down.
Straight down. I mean, it's going to go across, and it's going to go down, and it's a pain in the butt. But we use big flies, sinking lines. It's very unconventional. Sometimes you'll just be dredging, like, right behind the breaker, and you'll see rollers all over the place, fish busting here and there. And then sometimes you'll see them, you know, schools of 200 fish doing cartwheels.
Yeah.
Like a pod of tuna. And at that point, you know, it's common in those scenarios for everyone on the boat to have a fish on at the same time. Like, we've hooked 3-4 tarpon at the same time, and it's just ridiculous.
Wow.
It's not ideal, put it out. Yeah.
But it's fun.
But it's fun, yeah. And it's different, you know. Like, tarpon fish in Florida has its beautiful aspects. You know, the clear water and the fish coming from a few hundred yards out. And, you know, that's not going to happen in Costa Rica, but some other stuff that is really cool will happen instead, I guess, in
for
this
sure.
place. Yeah.
With the water being dirty, are you, like, throwing bigger, darker flies?
Massive flies. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'll throw, you know, 4-0 to 6-0 hooks, big hooks, and big, big flies, 8 to 8 inches long sometimes. And really just something to create a big silhouette. They're eating a lot of big mullet and a lot of stuff like that. And then it's the opposite. You could throw a 3 or 4 inch fly if you wanted to, but, you know, I like the idea of putting half a chicken in there and sinking it. But, you know, just it's got a different vibe to it, and they like eating them, so that's how I roll.
Yeah, tell me about the infrastructure, like, with being down there and at times having your family down there. What's the infrastructure look like? Because obviously it's not just the fishery that's different. It's the entire
system. Oh, certainly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no comparing Costa Rica's, I mean, as a country to anything we have here stateside, but it's a small country, to be honest. Like, it's like the size of West Virginia, the whole thing, but it's super dense and mountainous. So, like, between the coasts, you just have this massive mountain range, and then out where we tarpon fish, there's nothing. I mean, it's pure jungle. You're not going to – once you get out there, you're out there. You can't drive there. You got to kind of drive to a river and take a boat out to it, and then – the place we stay, I mean, you're really going from that place out to the ocean. And then if you can't get out, we go fish lagoons and stuff for, you know, little tropical panfish species or machaca, which is like a piranha species, cousin to the piranha.
Sick.
And we just fish all these weird stuff in the lagoons. And tarpon will be back there too, but the tarpon in the lagoons are a lot trickier to get than when they're oceanside. Like, oceanside, they're there just to eat, and it's pretty clear, like, by the activity you see on the surface, that the fish are there to eat as much as they can. Yeah.
So tell me, how did you first hear about Costa Rica? Like, out of all the places that you could, if you wanted to get up and move somewhere, why go there?
Yeah, we had met a girl that lived down there and sort of said she would host us to see and check it out. And then the doors just opened for us to move there, me and my wife and some friends of mine. And it's a whole nother deal, obviously, when you're down there. If you're down there running around as a bachelor, that's one thing. When you're in Central America with a wife and kids, it's another scenario. So finding a way to make it work that was going to be sustainable is key. And also, like, not having plan Bs. I think sometimes we give ourselves, like, plan Bs and Cs when we shouldn't. And like, if I had the option to bail out, maybe I would have, but it just was never an option. And, you know, recently, 3 months ago, I did move back to Central Florida, and who knows how long that's even going to last, because I'll still be guiding tarpon in Costa Rica, still be doing a bunch of freelance media stuff all over the place, so it's hard to envision what next year is going to bring, you know, but it's like, once I moved there, I knew, okay, I'm going to make this work, and I'm going to stick it out, and that was the best, because not a lot happens in the first year you're anywhere. Like, but once you're in a place for a while and you start knowing people and people start knowing you, and I got connected with some really good guys. The fly fishing industry is really tight down there. And we've got a really good conservation organization based on fly fishing down there that's called CRAF. That's led by a guy, Peter Gorinsky, who's actually, I got a stunning interview from him for the F3T film I put together.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of runs that organization, the help of some of the other buddies, and it's just become, it takes time to get plugged in a community like that. You know, if you show up someplace and you don't give it time, you're not doing the place justice. So I think that was key for Costa Rica as well. It was just staying there and telling myself, we're gonna make something work out, and it did, you know, praise God. Well, could have went a different direction, I guess.
It reminds me of that old tale that, you know, I don't know if it's real or not, but about the group of guys who have the ships and they're going in to fight a battle, and the captain says, burn all of our ships, and the crew says, why burn our ships? And he said, because we're going home in theirs. And it's kind of like, you know, like, there's no going home, and you know, this is it.
I'm
curious, like, what advice you would give to somebody who's maybe, like, they're in this kind of, this safety net, this comfort zone in life, and maybe they have kids, maybe they have a wife, maybe they have bills, whatever, and they're just trying to think, like, what advice would you give them on making a jump like that?
Well, honestly, like, I was married, I mean, and for me, nothing in my life would have even be what it is, even remotely close to what it is, without the support of my wife being an absolute champion. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my life knows that. They're like, you're a basket case. Your wife clearly holds everything together. And that's definitely true for me. But I think a motto that I came up with is I could be broke anywhere. You know, like, you could be broke in your hometown. You can move to a dream destination and be broke there, you know. But if you have a vision for, you know, or a direction that you're chasing, I think a lot of times people look at it financially first and say, this is impossible. And it may be at first like to thrive, but I think sometimes surviving is thriving, I guess, depending on what your perception is. Like if I'm getting by and my kids are fed and my wife's happy, and I'm doing what I love and I'm creating something cool and something that blesses other people and myself, I think that's thriving in my mind. And so perception's huge. Like if you don't have the right perception about the direction you're going, especially something like moving to a third world or, you know, Central American country, on a whim, then it's going to be tough and you're probably not going to make it. So, you know, I'm not saying have low expectations. It sounds bad if I was like, have no expectations, but, definitely having the right perception and being okay going through the struggle to make something awesome happen, is important for sure. And crucial actually. Because I could have bailed out. The type of struggles I went through in 6 years in Costa Rica, you know, if I wasn't headstrong about it, none of the awesome stuff in my life happening right now would have been going on. So,
and speaking of troubles and struggles, you know, there's a way in which we often don't want to go into things because we're afraid to leave our comfort zone. But when we get outside of our comfort zone, a lot of times, not only do we get the reward of getting to experience new things and go to new places, but often it's outside our comfort zones that we're shaped the most.
That's true. Yeah.
What for you, when you look back at 6 years in Costa Rica and being outside your comfort zone and going through struggles, what things kind of got sharpened or shaped in you from that?
I mean, everything, dude. Like my relationship first off with my wife is, you know, has grown so much, and just, I guess, relationships with friends too. And just the valuing things maybe that sometimes I took for granted, just like the ease of being able to go see my, you know, easy things, going to see certain friends, seeing family, I guess forced to appreciate the things that were right in front of me, and stepping away, right, gives a different perspective. So when I stepped away from the States and into Costa Rica with a mindset of I'm going to be here for a while, your perception on all those things back home and how you were doing things or how I was doing things changed. And so perception grew, relationship grew.
In what ways did it change?
It changed because I was kind of put in this position, right, where it was like sink or swim. So it was starting the fly business and saying, this has to work. And digging in, I think, harder than I would have dug in. So persistence, perception, and relationship all grew and deepened in so many, in every kind of way, because you're not in a corner, but I was like in this place of I'm going this direction. And any obstacle that gets in my way is just going to be viewed as an obstacle that I could either jump over, go around, or dig under, but I'm going to get on the other side of it, yeah. You know? And I think when you're headstrong like that, like I said, and you don't have plan Bs and Cs, then you push through things and having the drive to do that, is important. So it really taught me just to stick it out and go through stuff that's going to stretch you in every way. Like financially, like I said, you could be broke anywhere. There were times where I was flat broke down there and trying to talk to the wife about, yeah, I'm just going to sell these flies. It's like, man, and not knowing, you know, being okay not knowing is something I've learned. Like you talk to me right now about what's happening after next year. I don't know. And I think a lot of times we want to over plan and like, no, this is where I'm going to have my money 6 months from now, this is where I'm going to have my job 6 months from now, this is where, and I guess it's okay to try and forecast your life because we all do it and we want to have a direction. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you, dude, I don't know. And I try not to look past like a few weeks in my life. I'm not narrow-minded, but I'm very short-sighted in that respect. Like I know what's happening 2 weeks from now. And that's where I put almost all of my focus, because everything outside, especially post COVID and all this, COVID is a whole nother story on how that affected my international businesses, but definitely thinking, okay, whatever's planned 6 months from now could be completely different when I get there. So let's focus on what I have control over in the next few weeks. And as long as I'm doing that right and my short game's good, then I'm going to come out on top. I think that's true, especially for today's world with things changing so much.
No, I think that's really helpful. I was curious too, because sometimes you meet people who are like Christian missionaries, for mm-hmm. instance, and they live in these other countries, and then they come back to the States and they have like a culture shock, or because they've been around a totally different culture with different values and different qualities of life, you know, and then they come back and it's like, you know, you talked about having a different perspective. I'm curious for you, like moving back to stateside, like what things do you think maybe we get numb to that really aren't healthy, or things that you feel like should be avoided?
The list is so long. I mean, I'm blown away by things like every time I fly in, we'll say, from San Jose to Orlando, and I get on an interstate and I drive 2 hours directly to Crystal River. The infrastructure and ease of transport is something that blows me away. Even driving my little van up to meet you here, it was like, this is an awesome road. You know, and I'd driven that road a bunch in my life, and I never thought how awesome it was. And it is awesome. It's amazing that I could just get in a vehicle and appear over here in a few hours so easily. And then food, man. Like, the other day, my wife's sick, and I was working. This was 2 days ago, and she just ordered groceries to the house with her phone. And I was like, come on, you know? I mean, there's just ordinary things like that are mundane, that when you're in Central America, the ultra wealthy people can do now. But, you know, to go get groceries would be a 6-hour deal for me to get off the mountain, go to town, hit a farmer's market, get produce, hit the butcher, you know, it's like, and that's all valuable and cool in itself. You know, that's a cool process for sure. But I think one of the biggest values I've found is not, I would used to do things like that, and I'd be rushed, feeling like, wow, this is taking forever. Like, I hate this. Why can't we just get it done faster? And so being able to slow down is something that I really learned down there, is just slow down, focus on what's in front of you. And actually, my mom hates my little van because it tops out at 55 pretty much. But I love it about that. Even driving over here, dude, I was on 19, and people are flying by me in the left-hand lane, and I'm just, yeah, like, what are you doing? And I'm going 55, and they're going 80, and I'm going, I love this. Like, I love that I'm forced to slow down right now, mm-hmm. and take life in, because it's, dude, every second's just ticking away from us, and it's like, having things in your life that force you to slow down, like living in a third world country and having everything around you move slower, forcibly, you know, is good. And I think having those types of things in our life too, whether it's a vehicle or whether it's, you know, a morning routine or an evening routine or something that you get going that forces you to slow things down and get out of the rat race for a second, even if it's just mentally, is been a huge, huge blessing for me, for sure.
Tie this for me to how you've evolved and grown as an angler too.
Oh man, it's the fishing we did in Costa Rica, and being, it's so diverse, man, like rivers, oceans, beaches, deep rivers to jungle streams, like, you know, it's everything from trout to billfish there. So it was the ultimate, you know, testing ground for everything, I'd say, except sight fishing, like flats fishing. But that was something I grew up doing, so I had those skills. And immediately when I started, fly fishing was in Indian River, Mosquito Lagoon. So that was like the first thing I started doing, was targeting like flats fish. So every other skill that can be built from blue water to trout fishing can be done in Costa Rica. And so it just, now, I mean, you see me out there, like, I could cast well, mm-hmm. and I think that was definitely put on the fast track. Thanks to the diversity of Costa Rica, for sure.
What advice would you give to somebody who's young and is trying to be a better caster, be a better angler, be better at, you know, kind of learning fisheries and learning new things? Like, what's kind of your big takeaways of this is kind of what you need if you want to be successful in fishing?
Yeah, I think, you know, not being scared to spend the time to learn it right, and reach out to people too. Like, and I know, like, we talked about this, like, not everyone in the industry is the most friendly person. But I think if you could find a neighbor or a friend or someone that at school or wherever it is that does it, and having friends in the same passion, and even sports, like growing up, man, you played sports, so did I. It's way better, and you learn way faster when you're around people that care about it. So finding some type of community, which through the internet I think is a lot easier than it was back in the day,
yeah,
is important. And then just getting out there and casting in a diversity of situations. Like if you're going to be on the flats doing any of this inshore saltwater stuff, you don't cast in the backyard on the windy day, not the calm day. You know, there's no sense in casting in a calm day because you're going to get out on the water and it's going to be blowing. Or the fish is going to show up at the wrong angle and you're at the backhand, you know. So I think continuing to test yourself and learn from the right people. And it's just those two things, learning the right things and practicing the right things, you know.
Yeah, no, I think just to even think about the past couple of years for me, being willing to say yes to opportunities when you finally get an opportunity, like, you know, you drove up here, camped overnight in your van in the parking lot.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, and and you've actually you've actually made decisions in your life to set yourself up to be able to say yes to opportunities.
Sure, like that's important. Yeah.
Like having a van, so now you don't have to pay for a hotel room or crash at somebody's house. Like you have that flexibility and freedom. So it's not like it just happened. You know?
No, it doesn't. I think cultivating and that's where having at least a direction or a vision is important. Like definitely important. And especially if you're going to use fly fishing as an industry, like I have, you know, it's what I do. I'm either guiding people to fish, taking photos of people fishing, you know, creating the flies that are going to, you know, get someone that awesome fish of a lifetime, you know, like everything I do is around it. And that's also part of, I think, why my growth in is because I'm playing a whole bunch of directions in the same industry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not just tying flies. If I was just tying flies, we probably wouldn't be talking, you know?
Yeah. And setting yourself up, like early on for me, I would use my wife's Honda CRV, 2004 Honda CRV to drive to interviews and would pack peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And, you know, but I was like, how do I, instead of sitting around saying, man, it would be nice to be a trust fund baby so that I could go do podcasts. I was like, I actually asked the question of like, how can I try to better set up my life for being able to try to chase these opportunities down and to be able to say yes. And for my wife and I, like, there's just a lot of things that we don't spend money on. Like
certainly,
almost all of our furniture has been given to us and it's nice, but And my wife just doesn't really like jewelry, which is a huge blessing.
Blessing,
but
dude. Same. I have that same blessing.
So we just don't spend very much money at all on clothes because it's not that important to us.
Right.
And I think I meet a lot of people who are young and they're like, man, it would be great to be able to go and to learn from people and fish with people. And then you'll say, hey, man, well, let's go Friday. Oh, I can't.
Right.
But why can't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and sometimes there's a good reason, but I think that one of the commonalities that I've seen, whether it's like, hey, the only way that I could fish the amount that I want to fish is if I guide, so I guide. Or or it's, and it gets even more interesting with people who don't full-time guide and have oriented their life and set their life up to be able to say yes. And I think to me, that's really cool with the van. 'Cause yeah, the van goes really slow. It's very small.
It's small, dude. Yeah.
It's
it's not a big person.
It looks
van.
Bigger in pictures.
No, it's definitely small. Yeah.
But you got this van that lets you, it's a tool to be able to do what you love and learn. And I think that's something that people can think about is actually to ask that question in their life. Like, if you want to fish more, then like stop making excuses and ask yourself, how can I do it?
Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard. Like when I, for instance, like I don't come from money. I don't know when I've ever had it, to be completely honest, but I don't, that has never been a deterrent for me. Like, for instance, the first 2 years I fly fished Mosquito Lagoon all by myself. I had an old sit inside kayak, like called, I think it was called Sundance or something. It was like a, who knows where it was from. And it was a sit inside one, you know? And I would, not like the fishing ones today with the casting decks and all this stuff, like I would kneel down on top of it with a 5-weight TFO that I bought from Bass Pro with freshwater line on it, and I was slaying redfish and snook and tarpon by myself, no fancy boat. I mean, it helped that I grew up in paddlecraft for sure. But, you know, I didn't have nothing, and I was still able to learn and have all these great experiences. And I think that's important too. You know, work within your means towards something. You're not going to go from zero to hero in this thing. You know, you're not going to go out there and buy, you know, a freaking triple zero to a 12 weight and go catch every fish known to man in your first year of fly fishing. I think focusing on what's immediately in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and using the means in which you have to do it is a completely reasonable way to enter fly fishing. That's the way I did it, you know? And obviously now that I'm plugged in and I know a lot of people, it's opportunities like this or opportunities to go somewhere, record or Vance, or those things come because first of all, I've been headstrong about this for a long time, you know, and a lot of people look at me maybe and be like, oh, this guy comes from whatever, but man, you never see the blood, sweat, and tears people put into things.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't. And people don't see that with me sometimes, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think people don't see. I think that it's interesting because from my experience the past couple of years meeting people and doing interviews, the people who are the fishiest and fish the most and I think have really got that lifestyle that so many people want, they don't have it because of the money. They have it because of what they are willing to not have.
No, and that's true.
The sacrifices they're willing to make, like,
because I mean, you saw me eating peanut butter roll-ups on, you know, like, and that's what I'll eat for the next 3 days. You know, like,
yeah, and there's a lot of people that have money that they have all the stuff, but they don't actually fish that much.
That's the other side. You do see that a lot, and I think what that is the industry is so oversaturated now with media, and granted, I'm a part of that. You could say problem, if you will, but. You know, it does bring a consumer-oriented mindset to the industry or, you know, so people, they buy all this stuff, they want to look the part, and then maybe they get into it and it's really not for them, but then they've just spent 15 grand on rods and reels, so they kind of want to be a part of it. And it's, I think if it's, again, for me, I fished my whole life. I'll fish until I die. Mm-hmm. So it's like, But not everyone in the industry is that way.
Yeah. So you're the second person, I think, that I've interviewed that is really into paddleboard fishing.
Mm-hmm.
The first person I interviewed, Drew Chacon, who's also a fly tire.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a coincidence. He also wrote a great book on, like, how to fly fish on a standard paddleboard, which is cool because I've grown to really like these, like, super specific books because they're, like, they really, you know, deep dive into this
right.
stuff. Tell me about, like, how being a paddleboard fisherman has helped you as an all-around angler.
It's instrumental. Like, when you're, again, like, a paddleboard is something that makes you slow down. Like, you're not going to whip around like you do in a skiff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it puts limitations on you. And I think working around the limitations in your life, no matter what the scenario, it's fly fishing or if it's home life or it's business, when you have limitations, like I said, and you're headstrong, that's just an obstacle that you're going to get around and learn how to maneuver around. So when you're in a paddleboard, you're limited on speed, you're limited on range from where you launch, you're limited on your visibility, you're lower to the water than you are on a casting deck of a skiff. You're forced to be like, okay, I'm going to go slow. Like, uh-huh. You're in my van now. Like, you just went from being in a Ferrari and now you're in my van. Like, you're forced to slow down. And when you do that, man, like I was telling you the other day, I was spooking fish 5 feet from the front of my board sometimes, you know, like you're able to get close. If once you get your balance and you're not putting off a bunch of vibration, it's a great tool to get through saltwater stuff or rivers. And Drew's real tight with the guys from Boat Boards, which I am as well. And those, any of their paddlecraft is a joy to be on. So it's like having something that's a quality paddleboard that's going to be able to cover water. Like I told you the other day, I'm like, I'll paddle 12 miles. Like,
yeah.
And I can, but having that quality of gear to get out there is important. You know, you're not going to do that on something from PriceSmart or whatever it is, Walmart or whatever you guys shot at. It's like, having the right gear is good, but the paddleboard fishing for me, it's like bow hunting too, right? When you bow hunt, you could go out there with a gun and shoot the deer at 200 yards, but when you put limitations on yourself, you have to be stealthy, you have to be accurate, and it's like that, especially fly fishing from the paddleboard. You're not going to have shot number two.
Yeah.
You know, like typically, you're going to need to get it done.
So it's interesting because you talked about, like, you don't have all these other things to worry about. And so, you know, when you're in a skiff, of course, like, you can cover a lot more ground. You have higher elevation. You there's obviously a lot of other things that you can do and think about and focus on. It's interesting, like, that you said the word focus around it. I'm curious, like, when you go out on a paddleboard, what are the things that you're really focusing on that matter the most there?
Man, like, being quiet and not – being quiet and not putting off any type of vibration. Like, a lot of the times – I mean, I'll fish, the whole front of my board is clean. There's no, all my gear is right behind me. All that's in front of me is my rod. And if I could be on that thing for 10 hours in a day and be laser focused, like mentally on looking for a redfish, and you're just moving super slow, you're constantly gazing at every little movement. And where I fish the most, like Crystal River area, we have gin clear flat, so that's super beneficial obviously for sight fishing. And you just get in this hyper, I do at least, I get in this hyper focused zone to where I know, and at this point it's all second nature, right? It's like I don't think when I'm out there about my actions. I'm just doing it. It's like second nature to me. So I see a fish, you have to know how to bend down and get your rod without putting out a bunch of shock waves. You know, if you just bend over and shake the boat a bunch, that fish is gone because you're only 30 feet from the thing.
Yeah.
You're not typically hitting fish at 80 feet. Like, you're 30 to 40 is what you're working with, you know, when you're on a paddleboard.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I try to keep my skiff set up really simple because a lot of the guys that I fish with that I enjoyed the most and I felt like were really I don't know, that I was like, wow, like, this is the type of angler and fisherman that I want to be. They ran really simple setups, and I think it allows you to actually, like, you have more mental energy focused on seeing fish, approaching fish, all of that. And it's interesting because it's kind of like the mindset that's popular. You know, Steve Jobs famously wore, like, the same shirt all the time. And, and what they talk about is, like, you know, clutter, decision fatigue, a bunch of things like that actually behind, you know, it's kind of like a computer. Like, behind the scenes, it's like bogging down your operating system. Mm. Do you feel like when you go out on a skiff, because you're a paddleboard, that's what you do a lot of? Do you feel like that is an advantage to you because of that?
I definitely feel like I'm very dangerous on the front of any pulling skiff. Like, if I'm being pulled to a fish and I have nothing to think about except making the cast, I could typically get it done.
Yeah.
And I think, yes, part of that is because when I'm paddling myself on a paddleboard, I have to spot a fish, quietly get the paddle down, pick up my rod, start false casting. Whereas when someone's controlling the boat and all of that, and all you're thinking about is the cast, you know, it just seems very easy to me. Mm-hmm. A lot more easy than when I'm on that paddle craft and everything's in my hand. Yeah. And I think definitely having done it so much from paddle craft, has just got me to the point where, yeah, I could be on the front of a skiff and be very confident that I'm going to hit that fish. Like, yeah. If I could see it and it's not spooked, I'm going to feed it, you know?
And you made great shots today. And
I mean,
it worked out, yeah.
Yeah, like, when it works out, it works out.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, it's like, I feel like if you can get it done on a paddleboard, you can get it done on anything. You
know, I think that's very true, yeah, especially in the sight fishing world, like shallow water. If you could do it on a paddleboard, you're going to be just fine on the front of a boat. There's no doubt.
One of the things I enjoy about you is I think that, like, you definitely have a way of, you're not a huge planner, but you kind of know what matters the most to you, you know?
Certainly,
like,
yeah.
So it's kind of like almost like, you know, you still have a North Star, you still have like a guiding direction you're going, but you're focused predominantly on what's right in front of you. And that's where all the hazards in life are. And that's where a lot of the good things are, right in front of you.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Things.
But, you know, I know for you, an important part of what shapes the way that you think about things, including fishing and family, is your faith.
Certainly,
I'm curious,
yeah.
Like, just could you share a little bit more about how, as being a person of faith, you feel like that influences you as an angler, a worker, a photographer, videographer, etc.?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in business, it's all about doing right by people. I mean, you can't, in my world, it's like, as a Christian man in 2022, which is like a nightmare of a place to be for a Christian man, to be honest, it's always making sure that, number one, I'm thankful for whatever I have. You know, I'm content in a tent, if you will. And I think contentment, you're not going to, if you don't have contentment as a launching pad, you're probably never going to be happy in life, no matter what direction you launch into. Because being content when you start, and like I said, I could be broke anywhere, like that type of mindset.
Yeah.
I think is a very good mindset for a man of faith or someone who's God-oriented and trying to find out what God has for them. Because, you know, you should be content with whether you're rich or you're poor or however it's going to work out, it's going to work out. And I think when you have something like me, knowing when I went to Costa Rica that God's going to do something for me, that I, even though I don't see the end of it, that it's going to work out. So I'm going to go headstrong at it. I'm going to go through the struggles because I know this is a scenario that's bigger than me. Life's bigger than all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think accepting that, but also having, like you said, like a North Star, or having faith in a God that loves me and is going to point me and my family in the right direction and never leave me, that's a huge advantage. In business, a huge advantage in life. And that's obviously any decision I make. My decision to go to Costa Rica was for that. My decision to come back was for that. And everything I do, man. But being thankful and being content are the two main things. And doing right by others, you know.
That's so good. It's funny you say that too, because one of the most popular Bible verses is Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And it's funny because that's like an iconic sports thing.
Certainly, about, like, yeah. I can make Thanks, Tim Tebow.
But if you actually like read what is happening around that in the letter of Philippians, Paul's actually talking about contentment. And he actually is talking about whether in poverty or whether in wealth, mm-hmm. whether he's imprisoned or not, he's saying, I can do all things.
Right.
And if you actually look at it, he's not saying I can do all things like get a promotion, get a car. He's saying I can be content in life. And I think that really deep down, you know, like that's what we're being sold is, you know, you talked about the industry being oversaturated. Like if only I had the right skiff, the right rod, the right clothes, the right look, my body was the right weight, all, et cetera, whatever the thing is, like you're constantly being sold, hey, you're one thing away from being happy, buy our thing.
Right.
And I think that like deep down what people really want is to talk about what you said earlier, to slow down and look at, you know, look at all these amazing things around you right now, no matter what circumstance you're in, and enjoy them and try to actually maybe put things in life that are going to slow you down. I think whether that's a creepy little van.
The creepy little van, a little candy van. Yeah.
Or it's a paddleboard. Certainly. Or it's like, hey, stop worrying about having the perfect skiff and go buy a $200 kayak from Walmart and just get on the water and see what happens.
Yeah, losing, I think a lot of people are in it for all different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. You get into things for all different reasons. And an oversaturated media side of fly fishing has definitely got a lot of people into mm-hmm. fly fishing that probably never would have gotten into it. And that just is what it is, whether it's from a consumer standpoint or from, hey, this looks cool standpoint. But I think getting into something with the right mindset and trying to keep that mindset and obviously not having it be something shallow, like how I look or mm-hmm. the consumer aspect of things, like I can only go fishing if I have this certain line because I won't fish that line. It's like, man, don't worry about that stuff, you know? And that stuff again, like, comes and goes. Like you're talking about your boat, like you got it, man. Like mm-hmm. like use it for what it is, and it's a great tool, you know, and appreciate it and use the hell out of it. But if it was a aluminum canoe, I'd be out there paddling with you, like I don't. You know, it's great to have awesome gear because they're tools we could use to appreciate the surroundings, but there's people that'll never have that boat, you know? And I fish my whole life, and I continue to fish off paddlecraft because I think it does show people that with the minimal things, you can get out and do all these awesome things.
Like yeah.
It's within your means is important, but being in it for the right reasons is important too.
That's good. If you're ready, I got some rapid fire questions.
Hit me.
Here.
Give it to me.
We got a lot of stuff. All right, so I'm sitting down with yet another person who's a professional fly tier, and that's a big part of your business.
That's right.
There's a lot of things that don't matter with flies.
Sure.
I'm curious to you, like, what are the big bullet point things that actually matter with flies? Mm-hmm.
So for inshore saltwater or in general? I mean, really, silhouette and sink rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you really need to worry about. Like, I could take that fly today, and because of the way it's shaped, if I my stripping pattern, I could strip it like a bait fish, and a fish will think it's a bait fish.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could strip it like a shrimp, and they're going to think it's a shrimp. So weight is important, and then silhouette.
When you got into fly tying, in what way did that impact the way that you fly fished?
Huge. I mean, when you're... It's like finding out that deer like acorns makes you think differently about setting your stand in some oak trees. You know, like when you start finding out what fish eat, and you're making the food for that you're about to feed to them, you really understand where you need to be looking for certain fish if they're eating certain things, mm-hmm. And how you need to deliver that to them, you know, like stripping pattern, et cetera, where the cast needs to be. And how that fly needs to be presented. So tying flies, it's a great way to get insight on the fish's behavior when you're going to feed it, because he's going to chase a bait fish a lot different than he's going to chase a shrimp or a crab.
As a father who has a kid, I'm curious, that's obviously a life-altering thing as you look back at becoming a father and raising a kid. In what ways has that impacted you?
Huge, man. Huge. Like, obviously having other eyes on you is huge. And then my kids grew up in another country, you know, so having raised kids in Central America, it's like no televisions. It was super low key, bilingual, not your typical like Florida boy experience. Like, he's here now and he's having like a heyday with it. He thinks his school is the best school in the world. The neighborhood super cool, but but my kid's super like my
the cafeteria lady loves him. He's like, killing it.
Thinks he's in like Golden Corral every day, and he's like, but he told me, we were just in Tennessee last week, and we got home. I was putting him in bed last night. And he's like, Dad, you know what? He's like, you know, I'm a mountain kid a lot more than I am a neighborhood kid. And I was like, you know, me too, son. I'm like, I like the mountains a lot more than I like this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So. Having kids is complex, knowing that there's eyes on me all the time, but both of my kids will come and sit on my lap and tie flies with me, and they're super interested in that stuff too. So it's just cool. It's super cool for sure.
When you look back at your life, what do you think has helped you the most with your casting?
You saying I'm a good caster?
Yeah, you're a good caster.
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, being in bad situations, there's nothing that's going to help you more than adversity. And when you're, especially in fly casting, like if you're scared to go out on the windy day, like you're not going to ever be able to cast in that windy day. So fortunately, I've had, you can call it fortune, I've had the ability to be in some really nasty positions and having to force myself to get together. So with fly casting, it's all about knowing the technique, like learning the how to double haul per se, but then being out on the flat in a windy day and making it happen.
Yeah,
for sure.
So obviously we could sit here all day and beat a dead horse on the dangers of social media.
Oh my God.
Which is the last thing I want to talk about on this podcast, because we've covered it well. I'm curious, as a content creator who makes videos and photos, if you had to make a case for social media.
A case for social media.
With all the, don't worry about disclaimers. Just what's your case for social media? What's the good?
The good about social media is connecting people within the same likeness. Okay, no matter what it, for us, it's fly fishing or it's media or it's fishing in general, right? But it's connected people like never before, and that can be used for good or evil. But the good side of it is that people are connected, and it doesn't matter if you love rocks. Like, you can get online and find rock communities. You know, like people that freaking love rocks.
Yeah.
And so that's a great aspect. I talked about how the first few years I started fly fishing, I couldn't find that community, you know, and I wasn't heavy on social media then. But now these kids, man, they can get online. Like, I went to church the other day, in Beverly Hills, Florida, over there where I just moved. And this kid's like, "Oh, you Jesse Mills from YouTube?" I'm like, never seen this 16-year-old kid before. And turns out there's like three or four younger dudes there that really look up to me, and it's allowed me to connect with them, and hopefully we can have some sort of, you know, community-based relationship around fly fishing that wouldn't have happened without social media. So I think the connection is number one. I mean, connecting people with like minds, that's number one, and it does a great job at that, surrounded by a bunch of other BS.
Yeah, and you know, it's cool because we were talking about that today, that like, you know, there's people that I meet that, you know, along the way, that they're just not that interested in developing like a big friendship with me, and that's fine. Yeah. Like that's it really is. But you know, like along the way you meet people who like, you're like, wow, this person enjoys the community. Like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Really to me, like the peak of that I think is really Vince. You know, like we could call instead of calling it skinny water culture, we could call it skinny water community. Because really has built a great group of people, him and Chase, that are like-minded. For you, as somebody who, you're still young, but you've definitely been able to get a lot of experience, you've been able to grow as an angler, like, what do you hope your role is in that community?
Definitely having more of an open door policy with, you could say, followers or people that know me from the industry or from media. You know, I got an open door policy, man. I try and do the best I can to kind of, I guess be an open door for people to walk through, because especially having a rough ride getting into it, I know what it's like being on the outside, and I think there's a lot of good people that could benefit the industry and steer it in the right direction that otherwise would be scared off. So I guess just being open and honest with people and being down to earth and not ever getting on a high horse is really the best thing I could do, and then just stay headstrong about my direction.
For somebody who wants to buy a paddle board, what do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, for fishing, the Rackham that Boat makes, in my opinion, is the pinnacle. But there's a lot of good, like, kayak paddleboard crossover type stuff out there. The industry, again, that's another one that's just blown up. Like, paddlecraft is insane right now. Most of the fishing kayaks, you could stand up and paddle like a paddleboard. So, like, there's a lot of crossover material for people that are kayakers that might want to get into paddleboarding. And then, but yeah, nothing beats the Boat Rackham. And then the HD from Boat Boards too is killer. They have, I have three of the HD inflatable ones in Costa Rica that we've used for 4 years and beat the piss out of. So like, the inflatable ones are super durable. You could throw it in the trunk of a car, you could store it in an apartment. So I think definitely for people that might be in an urban environment and not have the ability to store like a paddle craft, you know, in their living room, just those inflatable ones are super durable and will give you access to throw it in the trunk of your car and drive into a, you know, a pond or a coast and doing exactly what I'm doing, to be completely honest.
My last question is, if you could put one thing on a billboard and everybody had see it, what would it be?
On a billboard.
On an Instagram sponsored ad.
On an Instagram sponsored billboard.
It's a phone billboard.
Dude, honestly, just slow down. The word slow down and think. We'll put it that way. I think we run through life so much going super fast and not thinking. So I think if we just slowed down a bit and thought about our own existence and then the people around us, we'd be better off. So slow down and think would be a huge thing to have, as long as people would read it and then also listen to it, which no one does that with billboards. So, or ads for that matter.
Well, I appreciate your time, man, and it's been great to sit down and get to know a little bit more of your story. I look forward to fishing together more, and thanks for just coming out and hanging out today.
No, definitely, man. It was a pleasure. Definitely a pleasure. Same to you, meeting you and being able to get out there and catch a few fish is always something I enjoy, you know that.
Thanks again for listening to the Captain's Collective. Please help us out by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast. We hope that you enjoy. This is the Captain's Collective.